Hello, 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 everybody, and thank you for joining me on Cinephiles Radio. I'm your host, Steve Pisa. We have a special guest today. It's Hal Rudnick. Hal, I knew I'd mess up your name. You know that? I looked your name all day long. I knew I'd mess up your name. A lot of us know Hal Rudnick from Community, Reno 911, Adam Ruins Everything. But really, what I know him from mostly is from Screen Junkies. Now, if you love Screen Junkies the way I love Screen Junkies, then you're gonna love Hal. We're gonna talk about Hal, about different movies, different things, different parts of his life. We want to know a lot about him. So, without any more special ado, let's bring him on.
Hello.
Hey, Hal. How you doing, sir?
That's quite a studio audience you have, or some great effects.
That's the great effects we got there. It's the only production I have left here. You know, I was going to ask you how in the entertainment industry, but I understand that your father was an entertainer himself.
Oh, he actually was. He was a concert producer.
Wow.
And he produced a series of concerts called 40s in the 80s, where he brought old stars from like the 1940s, 50s, from like the big band and swing music era back to perform in the 80s. What's that?
Like,
oh, yeah, Duke Ellington. Yeah, like Duke Ellington. I don't know if you have heard of Mel Torme.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, Vic Damone, all these people that I had never, that were definitely before my time, but the big band era, Patti Page,
wow.
Rosemary Clooney, who's the aunt of George Clooney, and my mom and my sisters were telling me stories about a young George Clooney would be backstage with Rosemary Clooney. So my father had the entertainment bug, and then he also, kind of an offshoot of that, he gave me an education in classic cinema, which, you know what, I didn't appreciate it when I was a kid as much as I today am very thankful for it.
Now, I understand that he had you watch a lot of black and white films, right?
Oh, absolutely. So basically when I was a kid, I wanted to be out riding my bike, playing with my friends. But my dad was like, sit down. We're going to watch Casablanca. We're going to watch Shane. He loved the Western Shane, which,
Shane's
okay. Steve. All right. Here's a trivia question.
Yes, sir.
For you. What recent film from the past
Logan.
Few years, yes, there you go. Good man, good man. I didn't even have to finish the question. Heavily featured Shane as an homage.
Right.
And because Logan, obviously it was very much James Mangold made it in like kind of the style of a Western. Got the old gunslinger going for, with one last mission to take care of.
Did it help you to appreciate Shane and Logan a little more, seeing how they're kind of intermingled throughout the time?
Yes, absolutely. It just gave that much more clarity to the vision of the film, and that's one of the things that made it one of the best superhero films in recent memory.
Well, you wanted to ride skateboards or ride your bike, and you wanted to do kids things, and your dad wanted you to focus on media. Did he have something in particular in mind that he wanted you to do, or something that maybe an aspiration you had yourself that he was trying to inspire?
No, I think it's just, he loved movies and nostalgia so much. He just wanted to impart it to his son, and then I know my mom and my sisters. I have half sisters, and also my half brothers. Big extended family. But my dad always just he wanted to spread his love and fandom of movies in the same way. Like if you ever are, in your life, have you ever just been hanging out with someone and you are like, oh, you have to see this movie. I can't believe you haven't seen it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So my dad was like that times 10. And, and you know, again, as a kid, I was, I could kind of take it or leave it, but now I'm
right.
thankful that he introduced me to, the movies of like, James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart and, Lauren Bacall and
right.
Just so many greats. One of my favorite directors, Preston Sturges, who was like he was basically like the Coen brothers of his day in the 1940s
right.
and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, today I'm very thankful, and it gave me it made me that much more layers as a person, and that much something to really sink my teeth into. So I appreciate it now.
Well, I want to talk a little deeper about Screen Junkies later on, but I can see that it mm-hmm. helps you in your Screen Junkie battles when you go back against which film is better or which character is better. It does give you a lot more information on backlog opposed to progressive thought. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, I know, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, so many different films, but like if we're talking about Quentin Tarantino and his effect on cinema and how he changed the discourse on film over the course
right.
from the 90s to today, you're going to want to look back at Stanley Kubrick, and especially one of his, I think it's his second film, The Killing, which mm-hmm. the time construction, if you go back and watch this film, The Killing, the time construction is almost, it's very similar to that of Pulp Fiction, where it jumps
right.
around and it tells the story from different
mm-hmm.
perspectives, and it'll replay from that. And then also, you know, take a film like Rashomon from Akira
right.
Kurosawa. And
right.
Also, it plays with different perspectives and time construction
right.
and storytelling.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point of that film.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, just having like moments like that and films like that in my frame of reference are, you know, it helps in my appreciation of film and definitely in movie fights.
You are a very dangerous guest. You know, I can literally talk to you for hours and hours and hours about these films and make connections about them all day long. The one thing I really do want to focus on is your life. Now, did you grow up in Jersey? Is that what I understand?
Yes. Yep. Grew
yeah.
up in Jersey.
Nice.
And it was kind of had the best of both worlds. It was grew up in a nice suburb, but we were close enough to New York City where we could go in. My dad used to like to take my mom and I in for Broadway shows, and I'm also a big sports fan, so we'd go to Yankee games, and so that was nice. I appreciated being in that proximity to culture.
Yes.
in New York, being able
right.
to go in and kind of drink that in. And yeah, I really, and like I've spent you know, a lot of time in different parts of the country, like and going to school and growing up, but
right.
I love New York City. I love the city.
Well, you teach now and you've written just so much. What made you, or what pushed you in the direction of writing?
Well, that's a good question. I feel like, again, so much of it goes back to my dad. He was a real character, and he had a great effect on my sense of humor because he was just a real wild card when it came to like jokes and comedy. And when he was hosting his concert series and producing it. So I feel like that really pushed me towards comedy. And I remember I wrote my first comedy sketch when I was in like third or fourth grade. And then that kind of gave me the bug, and I've always loved making people laugh, and that's
right.
I mean, it's one of my favorite outlets, and thankfully I've been able to do that for a living to in various ways, shapes, and forms.
But your father really influenced you to be part of this world. How do you feel? Do you feel like they supported you once you entered it as well?
Yeah, he definitely did. I'm lucky in as much as my parents were supportive. They just wanted me to be happy doing what I'm doing. So if I was happy, they were happy. He never said when I was majoring in film, was a theater minor in college, oh no, you need to go be pre-law or you need to, you know, or push me into anything else. So I'm happy that it never really discouraged.
Oh, you're fortunate. Did he ever put you in a musical instrument? It's going to be my question since music was such a big part of your childhood.
You know what? I briefly played the trombone in junior high, but that didn't last.
Yeah. Yeah. I tried the trumpet and that lasted around 5 minutes.
Yep. I mean, and that's one thing that I regret sometimes that I don't play a musical instrument, because especially doing comedy, that would be, you know, I appreciate a lot of comedians who can, like I have a lot of ideas for weird comedy songs, but then I'm like, well, now I got to connect with someone who can do the music.
Who can write it?
I'm good for lyrics and a tune, but I don't really have anything when I can't play an instrument.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Screen Junkies. You got into this, excuse me, a couple years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. I've been a part of Screen Junkies for 6-7 years.
Wow.
And, yeah. They had Honest Trailers, and then I came on the Screen Junkies show. And, we've been doing that. And, it's crazy. I kind of think about, like, how many Comic-Cons I've been to. And
I've seen you at Comic-Con several times with Dick Fundy and what have you. And I've been to your panel a couple of times down there as well. Really. And you guys are always really nice. You guys are always very sweet to meet your fans and what have you. I've always loved Honest Trailers. It was just one of my favorite little gets. And I loved it when the directors would come on, like for Ant-Man or for Winter Soldier. And then they'd tell you their opinion as well.
Yeah, when I think about, Screen Junkies, I've gotten to do a lot of fun things through that show and meet a lot of cool people. Yeah, like Peyton Reed, the director of Ant-Man, and the Russo brothers, and interview a lot of different people. But actually, I'll turn back the clock a little further than that. I've been doing movie junkets. So I've been at Screen Junkies for 6-7 years. I've been doing movie junkets for maybe 11 or 12 years.
Wow.
I used to do them for Fox Sports and Fuel TV.
Was
a talk show. I don't know if you remember that that channel, Fuel TV. It was a lot of action sports programming. So I would there was a talk show called The Daily Habit that I started doing press junkets and interviews for, and that it was a lot of fun. And they did it in the same vein as Screen Junkies, whereas Screen Junkies, we always like to have some kind of fun game or something silly to do during the junket rather than just have it be like just a straight up interview. And I like that I'm able to incorporate comedy in these movie interviews, because even though I'm in the movie world and it's such a big part of my life, I do my first love is, if I have my druthers, is comedy. Movies were and like writing and performing comedy, that's my favorite thing to do. But I'm just lucky that I get to do this thing with movies, but also add some humor to it. So
am I wrong by calling your humor a little bit awkward? Just a little bit awkward humor. Go ahead.
Yeah. It often is. It very often.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, fantastic.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that, Steve. Yeah, I don't know if you ever saw my Kingsman junket that I did
Yes.
in, for the release of the Kingsman, the first Kingsman movie, the Blu-ray, in that they flew me over to London, and I basically tried my best to cause an international incident while I was over there. During part of the interview, I just wouldn't stop asking. So we were at this haberdashery, this menswear shop that makes very fine clothes in London. They, as they call them, bespoke tailored suits, and it is the shop that serves as the Kingsman tailor shop in the film. And they walked, and we were getting this tutorial about the history of the shop, and it was very dry. It was, and I don't know. I just wanted to spice things up a little bit. And I often can't help the idiocy that will come from my mouth. And sometimes I got to just give myself over to it. So I just kept asking Austin Powers related questions during this interview. And everyone was like kind of looking at me like, is this really happening? And it just got more and more absurd. And the third time I asked an Austin Powers related question, one of the representatives from the movie studio or the publicist came up to me and said, could you please stop asking those type of questions? okay, sorry. And so it was extremely awkward, but afterwards, it on film, it was very funny, and it made it was kind of the best part of the trip over there.
I think some of these publicists just don't know how difficult it is to interview people. And knowing that a lot of people who've been interviewed have been asked the same questions over and over and over and over again. I must have listened to at least six of your interviews the past 24 hours just to hear all the questions people are asking you, just so I can ask different questions myself. So that alone is difficult enough, much less going to a press junket and then asking.
Well, I commend you for doing your due diligence there.
I didn't want to come
nicely
in here
done.
Like a fool.
Leave that to me.
I'll tell you what. I love your humor because, you know, it can be very dry, and people do take it very seriously when the people are there are not trying to take it seriously. They're just trying to get in, have a good time, have a couple of drinks, leave, have people enjoy their film. And I think that's what you're providing to them. And I watch shows like Ellen, where she has their spokespeople wearing like short shorts and passing out tequila. It's the same concept. It's just a different format.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you got to also, if you ask the same thing over and over again, it just gets dull. And
it does.
And I feel like the people feel like it's just going through the motions. Like,
right.
Let's have some fun. Let's make it interesting.
Exactly. I mean, you're talking to a person because you want to get to know them better, not because you want to just spew out information. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you so much about your father, because when you're talking to people about their influences, often they'll mention nebulous people that really don't know and you're never going to meet. But when you mention a parent, that means a lot, especially in the entertainment business, where that's usually a non-favorable kind of job.
Yeah. I wish my dad could have seen, a lot of the things. He passed away 8 years ago. And,
sorry to say.
Yeah, I wish he could have. Thank you. I wish you could have seen a lot of things I'm, doing today. I wish you could have seen me, get married and all sorts of stuff. But, you know, I think he's responsible for a lot of the stuff that I really am thankful that is a part of my life, movies and, you know, sports and sense of humor. But he might also be responsible for some of my less favorable qualities. My dad was a mixed bag. I'll be perfectly honest with you.
Right. Either way, it sends you to therapy.
Yes, exactly. Listen, how long you got, Steve? Let me lay down on the couch here. And,
let's do that.
You know, at the end of the day, he was a good-hearted guy, and right. I know that he loved me, and it took me a while to come to a place where I felt like, you know, we had this unconditional love. Sometimes you have to go through that with, you know,
right.
a relative, a parent, a friend, a family member. So, but I'm glad we got to that place. So
I don't want to get to the end of the show before I ask you this question. If you were going to look back at your old self and give yourself some advice when you were young and you were going through that period, that transition, what would you have told yourself back then when you were a little confused or?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know if it's too cliche, but I would tell myself to believe in myself and work harder, because now, I mean, I love what I'm able to do. I love that I can, you know, make people laugh. I can get on stage and I write, I perform, I get to, you know, travel for Screen Junkies and do all sorts of fun stuff. But, you know, there have been a lot of times in my life where I've really questioned my ability to do these things. I feel like, you know, a lot of us deal with, you know, anxiety or self-esteem issues. But I would, if I could, I would go back and say, believe in yourself. You have the ability. Now work your ass off. And I think, you know, it's because a lot of people go through, like, you know, dark night of the soul, or just, you know, doubt themselves, or have anxiety or fear of diving into the thing that you really want to do, diving into the thing you love. So I would just give myself a little pep talk and tell myself to attack what you love. Do what you want to do, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Because now, I feel like, you know, I'm at a certain age where I'm working hard. I'm trying to create stuff, but there have been times in my life where I haven't worked this hard, and I just would say, hey, you can do it, man.
It'll work out.
Yep.
So tell me more about.
Oh, and then I would also one more thing. I would also tell myself to bet on the Boston Red Sox in the 2004 World Series.
Your future you would never have believed you. It would be like, this guy's full of crap.
Yeah, if I got to go back in time, I would have to have a little fun as well.
It sounds like Back to the Future.
Exactly.
So tell me, was there a movie that you saw when you were young, or a character that you saw that you were young, that is now coming into fruition? That is, like, maybe Spider-Man, or something that you grew up when you were very young that you wanted to see so bad that is finally coming into your its own. For me, it's most likely like Dark Crystal. Spider-Man. Those are some really throwbacks that I just couldn't wait to see. How about you?
Oh yeah, have you watched the? So you've watched the new Dark Crystal on Netflix?
I saw it in 2 days. Yes.
Yeah, I've watched. I've only seen two episodes so far, but it's it's just masterfully done.
It's magic.
And the voice talent. The voice talent is so fantastic. Yeah, it's really wonderful. It's, you know, Steve, it's crazy. We live in a golden age of, like, it's really an embarrassment of riches when it comes to like so many beloved characters and superheroes, and it's pretty insane. Let me think. One that really resonates.
You have Jughead now on that show on CW. I mean, that's the craziest concept on the planet Earth. Like, I'd never thought I'd see Jughead and a drama show on the CW.
Yeah, like Jughead given kind of like the OC kind of treatment, you know? Well, you know what I will say? We have so many channels now, and there's so many shows. It's ridiculous how, like, there's always another show that you're hearing about from your friends or just reading about on a film blog or something. And it's like, oh, my God, another show. But in that, you get all these cool gems, like a show like Fleabag, you know? That's a really funny and just incisive, thoughtful show that has just such a cool perspective about, like, accepting yourself and loving yourself and finding and just accepting your journey, but also being funny as hell and very raw. So, and then you get something like the director. I really like the director of Drive, Nicholas Winding Refn. Yeah. And his show on Amazon, Too Old to Die Young. Mm. It's such a weird journey. Like, that show is so unique because the pacing of that show is insane. It's so slow and methodical, but but it knows what it wants to be. And you couldn't have that show on, like, even on cable, like HBO or Showtime, because it's so weird and unique, only because we have these streaming services that allow this kind of freedom to explore weird concepts. That's one thing that especially that I'm excited about. Also, we live in a golden age of media in general. It's like a blessing and a curse how much stuff there is. I mean, the amount of cool documentaries and docuseries you can explore on Netflix, Hulu, et cetera, that's so great. So in addition to, like, obviously seeing the MCU in my lifetime is pretty awesome. But, like, besides that, there's so many just cool little gems to find on streaming services.
Well, let me ask you that the question right there that we got the MCU. You know, just like Stephen Colbert has to work on his opening set for politics, and it's constantly changing. Let's just say the Spider-Man story on how that story is constantly changing, and then you have to make a comment on that on, you know, Screen Junkies or wherever you need to make a comment about it. Does that sometimes make your head spin? That the news is coming in so fast these days?
It does. And it's a blessing and a curse, because the gift that keeps on giving, there's always just more news about these tentpole franchises and the studios, whether it's Star Wars or the MCU or DC, so it's nonstop, but it does, like, just when you think the Spider-Man story is going to continue with Nick Fury, and they dropped this, I don't want to spoil it too much, but there was some crazy stuff that happened at the end of Far From Home, and then boom, now Spider-Man is back with Sony, and that what they were setting up may never come to fruition to explore, you know. It is kind of mind boggling. And just in general, in life, we live in an age of a very fast news cycle, you know? Stories are constantly changing. Did I lose you?
No, you didn't lose me.
Oh,
just listening to you.
Oh, sure. Stories are, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Also, sometimes it's like, wow, it's just overwhelming the amount of news out of, like, with Disney Plus now, it's like it's going to be insane.
Like 24 shows. It's like, how do you keep track of all the movies, shows, What If cartoons that are coming out as well? It's insane to see about how much media is coming out. Disney Plus, they're bringing in Hulu with it as well. And then you have what, Amazon Prime, and you have Netflix. Oh my gosh, it's media heaven now.
Apple TV streaming
Apple
service.
TV.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's pretty bananas. Sometimes, but you know what? For the movie, TV, chat shows like Screen Junkies, Collider, all the blogs, you know what? There's a lot of stuff to dissect.
Right. There are a lot of channels out there. Yeah, it is good for business. Having a lot of media is good for business, but it's also good for storytelling because you get to see what's a good story, what's a bad story pretty fast because a lot of things are being created. So I think writers are becoming a little bit more excellent. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, you make a great point there, Steve, because you get to see now, like, the bar is raised. And you get to see what a quality film is and, what isn't quite up to snuff. And so it makes us a more discerning viewer. And you appreciate when something breaks through the clutter, like a Logan or, Deadpool. When that first Deadpool came out, oh, man, what a breath
that
of fresh
shocking.
Air.
Right.
Yeah. Like just such a weird, funny, hard R superhero movie. So,
right.
And that changes the conversation. It makes anything possible. I think, and like without the hard R of Deadpool or Logan, would you eventually get something like The Boys on Amazon?
Which
you know,
is a great show.
I really dug it. And, but it was just dark and explored superheroes in a way that, it's dissecting them, and I know The Boys, based on comics and everything.
Right.
But we wouldn't be able to explore that in, on TV or have it filmed if it wasn't for the comic book movies that opened the door for that kind of R-rated stuff.
Well, Emily Blank just made a movie called Brightburn. Did you see Brightburn?
No, that's one of the movies I missed. But it's about like a young sort of
evil Superman
type kid. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you'd have that without Daredevil as well. And that's a superhero horror movie.
Yes.
If you ever want to be frightened of superheroes or why they made Cadmus for Superman, you're going to see it in this film. Because if you want to understand why the government would ever be afraid of Superman, this is a damn good reason.
I got it. All right, you're making me want to watch it that much more. Yeah, that's one of the ones that it's on my list.
What's interesting is that it doesn't imply that it's a bigger world. So I'm looking forward to seeing if there's anything more from that. Have there been any movies this year that have surprised you, that really caught you off guard as being really good? Not just good, but really good.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed that Booksmart didn't do a little bit better because it was so funny and
Olivia Wilde film.
It really struck me as kind of a combo of like Eighth Grade meets Superbad.
Yeah.
And that film, I thought it was just so smart and funny and And I think it like broke the mold just as far as like some of the things we expect in teen comedies and the strong female perspective. I don't think we see that have seen that as much. So I really dug that. I just saw this little movie that Shia LaBeouf's in called Peanut Butter Falcon.
Oh, yes. Good movie.
Yeah, I really. Yeah, I really dug that. I mean, it's just like Shia LaBeouf, he keeps reinventing, and he does like he's done a lot of like out of the box, you know, unusual stuff, and he gets like dinged for being weird. And we did a Screen Junkies thing with him years ago, but
I remember.
But he does some really good work. He made American Honey was a film he made several years ago that it's a little too long, but it was also just like a thoughtful, grounded, like truthful journey. Like I think he makes some good choices. Another film that I was surprised it was so damn good this year, John Wick 3. I loved John Wick 3. I think that might be my favorite of the series so far, because the action, it reminded me a little bit of The Raid and The Raid 2.
Oh, yeah.
Just as far as the quality of the action that kept topping itself, because it's hard to make an action movie that is just dependent on one action set piece after another that can keep you just riveted and you know, and just keep topping itself. So very impressed by John Wick 3 as well. And then, you know, Endgame, just one of my, like, I mean I just remember just being so satisfied by that. And
that was a
Once Upon
movie.
A Time in Hollywood as well.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. So are you in the not such a fan of it, or
you know what?
What do you think?
I'm a huge Quentin fan, but I did not like it at all.
talk to me. Let's have a movie fight about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood right now.
Oh no! Let's have a fight about some other movie. I don't want to fight about my hero. You know,
go ahead.
You know, what I really felt about the movie is that it kind of lingered on. I could have done with just Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt's character and staying on there and staying there for maybe 2.5 hours. I really did not need to see any other characters, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Especially Roman Polanski, who I'd rather see in prison than in a movie. So
sure.
it was just one of those films where I'm just like, a lot of this not really what I go to see Quentin for, and I don't really know what he's going for. So I'm gonna have to see about 3 to 4 more times to kind of get a vibe of what are you really going for here, because I really just didn't get it. Could have been my mood, could have been what I ate, and it could have been what I didn't drink. but it just didn't satisfy that sensation you get when you see a Quentin Tarantino film, let's just say like Reservoir Dogs, where it's like a stage play made as a movie, or Pulp Fiction, where you have time travel almost instantaneously, like quantum mechanics right in front of your face. Or when you're talking about any other of his films, even Jackie Brown, which he didn't even write, where you have an excellent film that it follows a process that lets you understand this is a solid movie, this is going in a direction. I didn't feel that from this. I felt a great fragmentation from this film. I felt like it pushed me away a little bit because it didn't really want to include me. It almost wanted to push me away a little bit. So that's kind of how I felt about it. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't blame you. I connected with it, and I've gotten to appreciate it more and more since I've seen it and thinking about it. Because I find myself thinking about it. It's one of those films that I thought about a lot after I watched it. And I hear you about it, like it being a bit too long.
Right.
But I feel like if it didn't kind of meander on its journey, you wouldn't stumble into these amazing moments. I think the lead performances by Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio were so magnetic and so watchable. I kind of agreed. Guillermo del Toro tweeted about the movie, and I really found myself agreeing with this tweet where he said, "I can't wait to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again so I can hang out with these characters some more." And that resonated with me because I did think about the whole Manson aspect. What
right.
was it necessary? Should we have had more? Should we have had less?
For,
and but you know what? It was just this fairy tale, and it wasn't about that. That was a product of the time, and because it was like the snapshot of Hollywood in 1969, and the some of the thoughts of the time about hippies and drugs and stuff like that, and Hollywood. So it wasn't just a clear narrative that popped like some of these other films, like, you know, Jackie Brown, or it wasn't this revenge story like Inglourious Basterds or Django. It was a little bit of a meandering journey. It was, I really enjoyed just settling in with those characters, and I do want to see it again.
You know what my problem is, I think my problem is that this is his ninth film. He only has one film left, and I don't want him to go away. And if this is going to be his ninth film, I wanted it to pop me in the head for some reason. But like I said before, like any Quentin Tarantino film, I have to see it again. There's no way I can have one one big opinion about a film that I've only seen once, especially from a great director like Quentin Tarantino.
Sure. I hear you. I want to see it again as well. Quentin Tarantino owns a theater out here. The New Beverly. They're showing it there on a regular basis. And I want to see it there. And they have it in a 35mm cut. And then also some cool trailers and things that are handpicked, like classic trailers that are handpicked by Quentin Tarantino to play in front of that. So I feel like I gotta see it in that atmosphere.
I was so blessed. I made a movie a couple years ago, about 7-8 years ago, and we were the last film to be played in his theater that was digital. From that point on, he went purely film. So we did a festival. We played at a theater. It was a dream come true, because he's always been a big hero of mine. I'm a huge fan of his since I was a little kid.
Yes.
So what a great director.
For sure.
So
he was a game changer.
Oh, absolutely. Did you see all his films even when you were growing up?
I've seen all of Tarantino's films, and you can tell he's not just a great filmmaker. He's a student of the game, in the same way that Scorsese is a student of film. So there's that extra level of appreciation and homage to great films from many eras.
Let me ask you a question, and this is going to be totally off base, but let's talk about the Batman for a second here. Considering what we know about Heath Ledger and all of our judgments that we made on Michael Keaton as Batman, should we be making any comments or any kind of sway in Robert Pattinson's direction being Batman in the future?
Well, here's the thing. I really I'm excited for Robert Pattinson because I'll tell you why. It's because of this one movie from 2 years ago called Good Time.
Oh yeah.
Good Time is a raw, visceral movie made by I think it's the Safdie brothers, and it is a journey, and Robert Pattinson, like, he is so far away from Edward Cullen and Twilight.
I agree with you.
Like he is no teen idol, and he shows real acting chops. And not only that, it is just like gritty and like just a dirty film, like in just all sorts of subject matter, like and violence, and and it doesn't pull any punches. So the fact that Robert Pattinson could pull off such a cool, weird little gem of a movie, it gives me confidence that he could be the Batman. And not only that, he's in an upcoming film that I'm also really looking forward to.
The Lighthouse?
With Willem Dafoe. Yeah, The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I love Willem Dafoe. He was great. He loved him in The Florida Project and throughout his career. And that movie looks so moody and like it just has a very distinct, haunting tone. And also it's from A24, and A24 their track record is pretty impeccable lately. So
yes.
So you know what, for so many of those reasons, his choices and what he's shown lately, I'm on board with Twilight Batman.
Yeah, so am I. You know, my friend just the other day, well, a couple of weeks ago, when he found out the news, he texted me immediately, and it was like a horror film for him. And I tried to remind him about how many times did we have doubt about an actor in a film, and it turned out to be perfectly fine. Everything's going to be perfectly.
Yep.
Plus I did see these films as well. And I knew that he was a great actor as well, and he would do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, plus the director's great as well. The director's not going to pick some schmo.
Right. Exactly. And how many more Batmans do you think there will be in our lifetime? I mean, how many Jokers have we seen in our lifetime
right.
at this point? So
right.
it's going to keep evolving and changing. And you know what? 15 years from now, we'll think of the debates we can have about the best Batman. There's going to be so many. How many? Okay, let me ask you a question. How many Batman? 15 years. Let's count the Batman. There's there's Keaton, Clooney, Kilmer, Bale, Affleck, Pattinson is going to be six. Adam West is seven. Are we going to get into the? Are we going to get into the animated Batman? Yeah, I mean, so how many? Okay, let's. The Batman on film, seven,
right.
I think. I'm probably leaving someone out. How many do you think there will be 15 years from now?
Jeez. About another three or four.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably.
That's frightening.
I mean, but it's the world we live in. I mean, I can't believe there's so many Spider-Men.
Neither can I. Now they're going to do seven TV shows.
I mean, it's such
shows.
A short span.
Oh, my
such
gosh.
A short span of time.
I know. The whole world exploded. It's interesting that in our time, we heard so many people saying that there's not enough fresh properties. Now they're taking fresh properties and just exploding with them.
Yeah. Well, but if you look at so many of the top 10 films, it's everything is either a reboot or a sequel, though.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So I think we could have even more fresh properties, but then you have something like The Edge of Tomorrow, which is
right.
A great, original piece of filmmaking that tanks
sure.
at the box office. So
right. They're still making a sequel.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Hopefully the title is more inviting to the average moviegoer.
They have the same team coming back, and it's supposed to take place right after the first film. So I'm really looking forward to it, because that movie is just fantastic. Unfortunately, you can't have Bill Paxton in it anymore, but
yeah.
Sad,
yeah,
right?
Rest in peace. Yeah, love that guy.
I know. Game over, man.
Yep. Oh, Aliens. Aliens definitely. The Aliens is one of my probably top five favorite movies.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. When I went to go see that film, the first jump scene when that sucker goes to the window, you just jump up in your seat.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, what film disappointed you this year?
That's a good question.
That's a harder question.
Yeah, it is. It is. Oh, you know what? I'm going to say Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw.
I, Yeah. It was just a little, the humor was just a little too dumb, and the action was not quite, and listen, I'm not expecting, David Mamet or, the greatest script in the world. But I don't know, after like the 10th dick joke, I was like, okay, and the action, I liked Idris Elba and I like those dudes, but I don't know, for some reason I was just like, nah, wasn't that great compared to, I think I hold everything up to Fast Five when it comes to that franchise. Fast Five was just like such just a like raw power, like fun, kick-ass
right.
thing. But I think just those two guys, I think you need a lot more of the crew, the whole crew, because like you'll have Ludacris or somebody else or Michelle Rodriguez or whoever there making a quip or doing a thing, so like it keeps it popping. The story choices, like I just didn't buy. Yeah, I found myself like kind of like being like meh when I got out of Hobbs and Shaw, and that was one I expected to just go in and be and like go for a ride and not even think. But it had me think
right.
a little too much. Like, yeah,
well, this isn't
not
so good.
Quite feeling it. So
that's too bad.
Yeah.
So how I understand you're
yeah.
teaching these days.
Yes, I love performing comedy, and I do it often at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, the UCB in Los Angeles, and
nice.
I teach writing and performance classes, comedy there, and right now the main thing I'm teaching is character classes, creating original characters for improv or sketch comedy. So kind of like, in the vein of like Saturday Night Live style characters.
Sure. Right.
And
yeah.
I help students devise and come up with these characters and write monologues. And because I love playing characters and I've just been doing it for years. So,
Did you used to watch SCTV as well?
Oh, yeah, SCTV.
Yeah.
Mad TV, Saturday Night Live, Monty Python, Key
yes.
and Peele. In Living Color.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We watched that back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So how's the teaching going? Teaching going well?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's one of the great things. I'll tell you two things that I really love about teaching. One is I get to see, it keeps me kind of fresh and aware of like, of what people want to talk about and want to write about. So it kind of keeps, it keeps my kind of wheels turning when it comes to, all right, what's going on right now in comedy, getting to work with so many young people, students, you get students of all ages, but it's a lot of people who are younger than I am. So it keeps my ideas fresh and it keeps me aware. And then also I feel like it keeps me, I get to hear a lot of different perspectives. You know, I'm just like, middle-aged white guy, Jewish guy. So I have my perspective, but I get to talk to and learn from and listen to people from all walks of life and all backgrounds, people who are different from me. And I feel that that increased awareness has made me a more thoughtful, creative person and just a more thoughtful person, being able to have interesting conversations about, oh, what someone different from me finds offensive or finds interesting. I feel like that's helped me a lot.
Hal, before we go, if you were going to talk to somebody back in Jersey who wants to do the same thing that you want to do, wants to write, wants to act, wants to be part of all of these things, just doesn't know how to put the pieces together, what advice would you give that person?
couple of things. I would encourage someone to learn how to edit and shoot. And you can do it, you know, we can do it on our phones now. We can, there's so much you have in the palm of your hand. So learn about the equipment and then foster your creativity. And you can do that by, I would say, take an improv class or take a writing class, a storytelling class. Learn about finding your voice and then figure out what you want to do. If you want to do movie reviews, you know, you can do it, talk right into the camera on your computer and do it that way. If you want to, and then start uploading videos, we really have the power to do it in the palm of our hands like never before. Like even like, you know, 15 years ago when I, you know, first was getting out to California and getting into this stuff, it wasn't as easy and accessible, but it's getting more and more accessible for everyone to do. So, right. Yeah, take a class and then watch as much. Like, what do you want to do? Is it movie reviews or do you want to write TV? Then watch as much of it as you can.
Right.
Yeah. So just, right. Yeah, a couple of things.
Huh.
And then one other thing I'd say, you know, you can have all the talent in the world, but hard work will beat talent. So work your butt off.
Thank you. I agree with that one.
Yeah.
You know how it's been wonderful talking. I literally can talk to you for hours. You're one of my favorite guests I've ever had. I really appreciate your time, your effort, and your advice to all the people that are listening in right now.
Oh, that's really nice. And thank you. Just hearing that you appreciate some of the stuff that I've done and Screen Junkies and the things we do, that's just amazing to hear. And that's one of my favorite things about, like, we were talking about Comic-Con a little bit, and like one of the great things, just getting to meet people who watch and appreciate the stuff. So Steve, I appreciate your kind words, and has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for letting me talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Keep up the good work. we love you. Keep up the good hard work. We want to keep on watching you forever. And I really appreciate your stories about your father. Those were really touching. And really, they felt really close to home. I really appreciate you sharing those personal stories with us.
Well, this has been a really cool experience. Thank you so much for inviting me, and I appreciate it. Thank you for a great interview. You really had me thinking there, and really those are some great questions. So I really appreciate it, Steve.
I'm glad I did my research. Thank you, sir.
Heck yeah.
You have a great day. That's Hal Rudnick. That's Hal Rudnick. Thank you very much, sir. And you have yourself a great night. God bless you.
Thank you. And as I say on Screen Junkies, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that song is called Angel. I love that song. Oh, there we go. So that was Hal Rudnick. I loved Hal. Hal did a great job. What a great voice. What great advice. Thank you so much for sharing your stories about your family. It helped us out a great deal. Sometimes it's really hard out there, guys and girls. Sometimes it's quite difficult. One of the reasons why I wanted to do this show was I wanted to bring on people like Hal, who were very positive, who had very good energy, who can share with you and impart with you wisdoms and part of their lives that can help you become a better person, or to understand why you're going through what you're going through and how either to get out of it or to go deeper into it. Hal Rudnick, thank you very much for being on tonight. I hope to have you on really, really soon. We had a great conversation about movies and music and inspiration, teaching, films of the past, films of the future, music of the past, music of the future. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. All right, everybody. That's the end of our show. Please stay tuned. We have a wonderful show coming up next week. And we still have a GoFundMe page going on right now, Keep Radio Alive. We have a GoFundMe for Keep Radio Alive with Steve Pisa. It is your contributions that keep this radio show alive, and I really appreciate it. Bless you all, and thank you for listening. Oh, don't you just love Claire de Lune? All right, everybody, have a great week. Have wonderful energy. Be with people you love and be positive. I will see you all next week. I am Steve Pisa for Cinephiles Radio. Thank you very much for listening in.